Hey, friend.
Hey, girl. Hey.
I'm really excited to be back here with you in this space. Today's episode is near and dear to us.
For sure.
And to the league.
Into the Justice League, for sure. So today's episode, you all, is all about moving through a diagnosis. And I love the way that you titled it, Em, because that's exactly what it is. I think so often it's easy to get defined by any part of your life, but especially a challenge. And our guest today, Julie, is going to talk to us about how she is moving through her breast cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, so just a trigger warning, we are going to be talking about breast cancer, cancer, mortality, and treatment. So if that's something that doesn't sit well with you right now for any reason, feel free to skip. So before we begin, though, we have two things we need to talk about. First, dumb shit people say.
People say, yes, yes, yes. Let's get to it. Also, I want to point out that I'm wearing my bifocals.
This is
people's first time seeing my bifocals.
Moving through a diagnosis.
Period. You know, I'm embracing the fact that my eye muscles have worn out at a big age. Bifocal ministry, progressive lenses. Let's get it.
So in dumb shit people say, former gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, who at this point, when she said this, was leading GOP primary polls, tweeted, "They kicked God out of schools and welcomed the drag queens. They took down our flag and replaced it with a rainbow." In later posts, she accused drag queens of grooming children.
First, I want my child to be groomed by a drag queen. I fucking love drag queens.
Same.
I mean,
what did the drag queens do to deserve this?
And let's just be honest. Drag queens of America are a very underrepresented population. I mean, we're talking about 0.00001% of the U.S. population. I mean, giving them this much power, I think, is great. I would love it. But realistically, this is ridiculous.
Also, they're performers.
It's entertainment.
What do we say about actors and actresses or comedians or musicians? Like, don't watch them if you don't want them, but if you don't want to, but like, what did they ever do to you?
But also, I mean, these people don't operate in fact, and we know that. But I'm just trying to figure out how we get from kicking religion out of schools, because it wasn't God, right? It is a specific religion in this society.
First of all, religion shouldn't be in public
schools.
There is
a separation of church and state, but it is a problem that the only religion we talk about in this country is Christianity.
And Christianity practiced in a certain way.
In a particular way, right? But what does that have to do with drag queens?
What does it have to do with rainbow flags?
I don't know. I don't know a school that said, we're not going to pray in school, but we are going to have every single, like, I don't know, ceremony, school assembly led by a drag queen. When did that happen, Margot? Did I miss it?
No. Although my kid's school does have drag queen story hour.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. It's amazing. Here's what I don't understand. Again, who cares? And first of all, the rainbow flag is beautiful, and happy Pride Month to everyone who's listening during June. But the fear-mongering around the infiltration of LGBTQIA rhetoric and how that's going to change and groom our children is something that we really need to investigate, because the fear associated with it is either coming internally because people are confronting their own queerness.
Period. Say it louder for the people in the back.
Or
because they be gay.
Or they're afraid their children are gay and therefore being exposed to queer culture is going to make them more gay?
Yeah. I think they convince themselves that everyone is born cisgender and straight. And research says that that is not true. We know early childhood and development tells us that gender starts to form very early. Sexual orientation starts to form very early. And so this is completely like denying what we know as a rationally thinking society that is rooted in qualitative and quantitative research, which is highly problematic because it spews all of this hatred that is in no way at all fact driven. Children know very young how, with whom, in what ways they identify. And that's whether or not a drag queen is pulling up to their school or not.
And it's whether or not they're being indoctrinated in heterosexism.
So I want to say something. I don't have children, obviously. If this is your first time listening, I do not have children. I am a self-proclaimed rich auntie. Not quite rich in real life, but this is the moniker that we
manifest
use.
It.
Manifesting the private jet for all of my nieces, nephews, and everyone
Godchildren.
In between. And so I was with a young person the other day, a little one, actually. So she's about 9, maybe 10 months. And her parents had on the iPad some sort of kids show. And I was surprised, Margo, at the amount of propaganda. I mean, it was like a video that was on a loop. My daddy goes to work, work, work. We love to play sports, sports, sports. Like, all of this, right? And then it's, my mommy cleans, cleans, cleans. She is so sweet, sweet, sweet. All of this gendered bullshit. And I was like, bitches in 1942? But then I thought to myself, oh my gosh, not having children, I don't often realize how these ideas in 2023 are still being perpetuated. Mm-hmm. And it starts so young. So they say we have a gay agenda. There's always been a cisgender.
Straight agenda.
Straight agenda. We're just asking for just a little bit of space. That's all.
Give the drag queens a seat.
At the drag queen table.
At any table.
At any table. That they for sure deserve.
And also, I'm just going to put it out there before we end the segment. For those who are hating on drag queens, maybe they should go to a drag show.
It is the most fun you will ever have mm-hmm. in your life. Just the sheer talent and joy.
Music.
That's on display. If you don't go to a drag show and have a good time, your heart is a cold place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's another problem that we can't help you with. And you surely should not be trying to enact public policy.
Thank you. Okay. So, our sponsor today.
Yay! Let's talk all about our friends over at Miriam. Miriam Wines is a great company.
Family-owned.
Family-owned business, which you know we love over here. We have been sent over a deep purple dry red blend with a fruit-forward nose that is complemented by aromas of sweet tobacco leaves and Earl Grey tea. On the palate, rich notes of blackberry and dark chocolate truffle dance on the tongue. Come on, dancing on the tongue.
It's really good.
It's absolutely. It's a 2019 SNED Red. Let me just pour you up a little bit more, friend.
Miriam is in California, in Hillsburg, I believe. Mm-hmm. But they also ship and are, you can buy at different places all across the country. So it's spelled Merriam. And they have all different types of wines of the year, different varietals.
Yeah.
So if you're in California, head over for a tasting. Yes. But in the meantime, please order because they are amazing.
And that's what I love, too, that we have a sponsor who can ship.
Yes. So it may surprise some of our listeners and viewers that we're moving into an episode around cancer while we're toasting with wine. But I think it is totally appropriate, given how we want everyone to approach these different challenges in their lives with their own equanimity and intentionality. And so here's to Miriam Wines.
Here's to Miriam Wines.
And welcoming Julie, who I've been dying to talk to, onto the show. Okay, we are so thrilled to have our incredible guest today, Julie. I thought, since you are actually the definition of multi-hyphenate,
mm-hmm.
you should describe what you do, who you are, and then we can go from there.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is so fun. Thank you so,
so
much
fun.
For having me.
Of course.
So my name's Julie. I was just describing myself. I said I'm actually pretty boring and I've had this interesting transition in my life over the past 9 months. So I am a tech exec. I've worked in 3 different tech companies in the Boston area over the past 15 years. Before that, I was a corporate consultant, worked for Big Four Consulting. I have a mother of 3 young kids. So my 2 sons are 8 and 6. My daughter is 3. And I am currently going through breast cancer treatment. So I was diagnosed, shockingly, right after Labor Day last year, putting on my bikini, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
Advocated, persisted, and got the really scary diagnosis of HER2 positive stage 3 invasive breast cancer. So that is a part of me. That is not all of me. And mm-hmm. I know both of you have been on this cancer journey as well. So I'm still in the thick of it, but that has been a big part of my life the past 9 months. Very recently, through how I found my cancer, I launched what I'm calling a startup nonprofit called Season for Squeezin'. So we're focused on ensuring women take a moment during the summer when their boobs are out. They're putting on their bathing suits to give themselves a squeeze and make the commitment. If you find anything, be seen before the next time you suit up.
And I think we'll get into this as we talk a little bit more about your cancer journey, but the persistence that you exhibited, we believe, saved your life.
Yes, 100% it did. And I think the message too, and we'll talk about this also, when you find something that feels different, and for me, the language wasn't there. It had always been a lump or a something else. Mine was, when I tell you, a barely there pebble under my nipple. I discounted it. I was like, I don't want to make a big deal. This is a nothing. It feels like a clogged milk duct. I had breastfed 3 kids. If it weren't for sharing this with my girlfriends, I think like many people, I have a text chain with friends and we talk about what's going on. I was like, hey, I felt this thing. The majority of them said, oh, put a hot compress on it. See if it goes away. And my friend Katie, who's a nurse, said, absolutely not, be seen immediately. And talking about persistence, she did not get off my ass until I was seen. And so if it weren't for my friend pushing me, and I think just the value of friendships and being so invested and persisting on behalf of someone else, I would not be here. I wouldn't be here talking to you.
That's beautiful. I think there are going to be so many themes in this episode around persistence, the value of having a community, a tribe, a village standing behind you, and also advocating for your needs and what you need from your community. And so before we jump in, however, Julie, we wanted to have a conversation about alcohol consumption, right?
Is
clearly.
I mean, 9 a.m. on a Friday, as you do.
And so, I mean, it's both fitting and ironic that the sponsor of this episode is Miriam Wines, a great friend of the podcast. Diana has been so incredible in supporting us in all the ways. And also, Diana Miriam is like a goddess of health and well-being in a big age. So shout out to that. But this idea about everything in moderation and people making individual choices on their own health journey. And so I'm wondering, you know, Tashira and I have a little wine in our glass.
Yeah.
You have water.
I have water.
Cheers.
Cheers to all of that.
To all of that.
And kind of what are your thoughts around lifestyle and balance as you navigate?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting conversation. And one truly I'm still trying to figure out. And we were chatting before the podcast about control. Right. So when you get this diagnosis, everything suddenly is out of control. And I'm someone who had a lot of control over what was happening in my life, in my job, in my parenthood and what you're doing with your children, the control, the calendar, all these things that you have to navigate and manage. And suddenly your life completely spins out of control. You have no control over what's happening to your body. And I think there are a lot of myths out there that, you know, there are these things that you specifically did or do that caused your cancer, and accepting that, like, that's not how science works. That's just not the reality. You and I were talking about this before. You know, my cancer, while I am still fighting it and battling it, whatever language you want to use for it, it exists for a number of different reasons that are probably unknown to me. And me trying to control every single thing that goes into my body for the rest of my life is not going to change the outcome. That said, at this period of time, like the season I'm in, I am still not safe. I am still in a place where I'm leaving right after this to get chemo. I'm through treatment. And my personal choice was, I have so much poison that's going into my body between the chemo and the radiation and the recovery from the surgeries. I want to invest in only fueling myself with things that are going to help me heal and recover. And alcohol and I are really good friends. I've had a lot of fun my entire life. For me, I wanted to hang it up during this period of time. I'm also on a very specific chemo that can raise my liver enzymes. Mm. So truly, like, one of the worst things I could do is drink alcohol in the season of my life.
But I love the language of season, right? Because it also goes to your organization, right? Like a season for squeezing. Yes. And we're all in different seasons constantly.
Yeah.
And we can move in and out of them.
Yes. Yes.
And so I think this idea of lifestyle choice and how you choose to live and imbibe and eat and change and modify related to your wellness is something that's also can be seasonal.
Yeah. Seasonal and not stigmatized. Because I think that's the other thing too. The judgment of like, oh, you can never have sugar again, Tashira, because you had cancer. It's like, get away. No, absolutely not. No. Let me do what I'm going to
don't
do for my
body. Don't you
know
that despair is like, what is that? The despair is the primary killer of people.
Oh, yeah.
Or despair and isolation.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So yes. Like people who are like not eating anything, dying alone.
I don't understand it. And actually, Margo and I were talking because I think in her community, and maybe this is the same thing for you, Julie, you're hearing this very, very loudly about this condemnation of alcohol. I think not just as it relates to cancer and healthy lifestyle, but maybe also weight gain, weight loss, totally. Et cetera, mm-hmm. right? So some of this is also a vanity metric. But in my community, have not heard that. And for me, it is my own research that has taught me, okay, Shy, chill out on the alcohol. Make sure you are not drinking, you're overindulging, for example. Do so in moderation because that's what I've chosen to do because I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
Not because I'm really hearing a lot of voices outside that are pressuring me to do so. So back to your point, let folks live. Let folks live.
And I think also something that is so powerful and important as we navigate this conversation, particularly around cancer, but any illness, right, is that everyone's journey is so specific to themselves.
Yes.
Like when, how you were diagnosed, what stage, what type of cancer, what your protocol is, who your doctors are. And we're not medical doctors.
Right, right.
The people on the internet, I mean, some of them are, but they're not.
Most of them are not.
Most of them are not. They may appear to play one on Instagram, exactly. But they are not.
And there's value in both. Like, there's value in Eastern and Western. There's value in different lifestyle choices and feeling better and sleeping better and being happy are all part of your recovery.
Totally. And what I've learned, too, I know myself and I'm rigid. Like, when I go all in, I go to 11. Like, I go all in. And so going on this journey and, you know, talking about Seasons of Life, not to totally transition away from this, but I think it's an interesting one, seeing both of you exist and thrive, knowing you've been through, I sometimes call it like the struggle storm or the storm season. Like, you've both been through the stormy season of cancer. For other people, it doesn't have to be, you know, cancer. It could be other things that happen in their life. But you go through this season, and to see you on the other side of it is really inspiring because I'm in it, right? Like, I think about the movie Castaway, and like, I've made it through like the fire and the fury and like the initial intensity of the storm descending. But now I'm like on the island. I'm living in it, and I've been here and living on this island. But, you know, maybe I'm taking the metaphor too far, but like, I'm here. I'm still in the storm. I've not been rescued yet, but like, I know the lifeboat's coming.
Yeah.
While I'm here, I am going to focus on the things that are going to help me survive because my number one goal is making it off of here and making it back into what the next season is going to be, which doesn't mean that this whole thing goes away. I'm sure that the cancer season of both of your lives is a prominent one of part of who you are, but you don't wake up with it every single day.
Yeah, for
sure. Where
for
me, I wake up and it's like, okay, I'm surviving. I have to survive and get off the island.
That's such an, like, poignant.
For sure.
And I was actually, as we were driving here, I was asking Tashara, like, are you okay doing another episode on cancer? Like, how does it make you feel? And I've always said this, and I won't speak for Tashara because I want her to respond, but like, Tashara has this superpower where she like moves through seasons really quickly. I don't move through them as quickly. Yeah. And so I'm wondering how that falls for you.
So I think it's something that you said that was really important, that you know the lifeboat is coming.
Yeah.
I believe it's always coming. It's always coming. So I, in my mind, and maybe this is faith, maybe this is spirituality, maybe it's a praying grandmama, I'm not sure, but I always think to myself, this shit is really, really, really hard right now, but I believe to my core it is going to get better. So my mom was also HER2 positive.
Oh my goodness.
And she was on Herceptin when I got diagnosed, so she was still treating when I was diagnosed. Oh my gosh. But I remember...
Two storms.
Yeah, exactly. Two storms.
Yeah.
We were in the hotel room. She was getting ready to go to treatment. And she sat me down and she was telling me about, you know, if I don't make it through the other side, you should do this, you should do that. And I looked her in the face and I was like, I'm not sure why we're having this conversation. You are going to be okay. Maybe that's some denial. I know we can't will ourselves or our parents into surviving such a major health challenge, but I am pretty firm in optimism as it relates to major storms. And that's why I think what you were doing with Season for Squeezing is so important, because it gives us something to look forward to.
Yes.
And we all need it.
Totally. And I'll share too, when going back to the element of control, in those first moments of diagnosis, so for listeners, for other people who have been through this, the only way I can describe it, it's like blood boiling fear.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where like you feel hot. And I jokingly, I operate through a lot of sarcasm. I remember saying to my husband, like, remember when we thought we've been scared before? Like, this, absolutely not. Like, that was all preparation for how fucking scary this is. And you feel it in your blood and your bones. And I remember, you know, you have to get through the day. I was still parents. I was, you know, you
well,
still
I
have
want
kids.
To talk to you about that.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to be here, like, for the rest of the week talking about that. You know, you still have to exist.
You still have to get home and make
you
dinner.
You still have to go home and make dinner. And at the end of the day, you know, I feel like you kind of take that off and you lay in bed. And I remember saying to myself, like, I'm not in any physical pain, but oh my God, when will this fear subside?
Mm.
And it does. Like, it does get better because you learn to live with it.
Yeah.
And I do think part of it is you start to hold on to and take all that energy that otherwise is expended and just being fucking fearful constantly into like, okay, I have to have a funeral for those feelings. I am really scared. I was never angry, really. Like, and maybe that's coming. A therapist could be watching this, be like, oh boy, here's my number.
The stage is coming, honey, don't worry.
So I have not had like the storm yet.
Have you had the grief storm?
You know, I don't know. I am also, the whole other conversation, I'm not a huge, it takes a lot for me to like have the cry. I know both of you, you talk about crying openly.
Yeah.
For me, I get, I think, overproductive and like really intense.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was my grief storm.
I mean, that could be me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You could be doing all of it.
Yeah.
But I remember in the evening, like it was really hard to go to bed because you're fearful. And when I started having to think about the conversation of telling my kids, but then also reflecting on, I can't believe I found this with my bikini. Like, there are parts of my brain that started connecting and being like, this doesn't make sense. But like, there's something, and I kept saying to my husband, I'm like, I'm going to bed again, really fearful, but there's something I'm chewing on. Like, there's something
Ooh,
here.
I love this.
And it's kind of silly, but you know, there's some, I have three kids who, you know, we watch every Disney movie 15 times a week, you know, a dream is a wish your heart makes, and in dreams you lose your heartache. And I truly feel that. Like, I go to bed and I'd be like, okay, I am now going to make a decision to start thinking about these other things. And truly, I was like dreaming up this idea of Squeezing.
Yeah.
And then also dreaming up a different way and a different approach to tell my kids and also to tell the people in my life what I needed. And through creating those, I don't know, assets or whatever, those things became opportunities for me to get some of my control back.
Mm-hmm.
So the creative process as that outlet for, and that, I mean, that hits so close to home for us and was very similar. But this is actually an amazing segue for us to share how we connected.
Yes, yes.
So I don't even know if you know this, but I saw Julie's posts, which were articles about her diagnosis on LinkedIn because they had gone so viral. So Julie wrote these short articles, essays, like about your diagnosis, about how you told your kids, about what you needed, about how your friends held space for that joy and grief.
Yeah.
And I want to hear about all of this. And these articles were on like the Today Show and all over the place because I'm like getting chills even describing it. I was reading them and I was like, oh my God, I wish I had had this because particularly your article about please don't bring me chicken or please don't bring me
the chicken wings.
Yeah, please don't bring me lasagna or something.
Yes.
And I remember, and my diagnosis was very different. Like my surgeries were preventative, so I didn't have ongoing treatment. But as I was recovering from my double mastectomy, people kept reaching out to me being like, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need? Can I bring you food? What do you need? What do you need? And I kept saying to my husband, like, I don't need anything. I don't want to tell people what I need. I only would like them to sit on this couch with me and watch TV.
Yes.
Like, that's all I need. Like, I have a lot of support.
Yeah.
At the time my husband was working from home, our kids go to school half a mile. We have a babysitter who we've had for 11 years who like jumped in.
You had that community to do those things.
And I don't need someone to like cook pasta for me. Like, and also you talked about how food is important to you and your family.
Yes.
And I want to talk about that as well. But, and like this kind of you putting those boundaries out. And we're going to link all of Julie's articles because they're incredible. You. But basically, you were like, what I would like from people is to go for a beach walk.
Yes. Take me for a walk. Get me out of my house and put hard pants on, as I call it.
Let me
put hard pants. And I think you hit on something so important, too, which is like what you wanted to say was just that real, authentic thing. And I think often people... As much as people love to bring you the casseroles and the chicken pot pies, people also love direction. Because once they're...
People want it.
And I really had to sit down because we were getting, the casseroles and the things. And I was like, I don't want to seem ungrateful. But I was also at a point in my diagnosis where it happened. It was shocking. I had 3 little kids and we had not told them yet. Mm. And it turned into people showing up...
With food.
Pale and terrified. Like, hi... Do the kids know? And the kids are like, what? My 8-year-old is like, what is going on? And I hated that phase because I just wasn't ready to tell them. I like to operate with facts.
Yeah.
And at that point, we didn't have the facts. We had the fear. And I did not want to transfer that burden of fear to my children yet in the absence of knowing. Like, we at that point did not know if I was terminal versus curable or treatable. That's like a whole other, period of 3 weeks. That's really scary.
Oh.
We didn't know what my treatment plan was going to be. We didn't know if I was going to lose my hair. We just didn't know. And so people have the best of intentions. And I have been that person. I overdo everything. My friends call me Auntie Extra. Something happens and I am like obnoxiously there early. I like to be early with like all the things.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of how I am. And being in the situation myself, I've realized, like, wow, you just show up the way you show up. You need to be more aware and attuned to how other people need you to show up for them. And what a moment for you to give that direction.
Yeah.
So it really started with that. So just to your, like, I just want somebody to, like, watch TV with me, like, sit and binge watch on, like, one of the shows. I wanted to get out. I didn't want people to, like, sit and look sad.
Yeah. I think that was also a really important like teaching moment because in our society, in many cultures, all we know to do is to bring food,
totally.
Right? So we haven't been given a lot of other ways to show up. And I think it is because we don't spend enough time creating those boundaries and expectations. So kudos to you because now your friend group, your community, they'll think twice the next time someone is going through something to say, oh, let me think about how they would like for me to show up versus what I know to do.
Yes. For sure. And to make it simple, I was asked the question a lot, like, well, how do people respond? And did you get pushback? And what's interesting is, in my work life, I'm a list maker. It's like, here are objectives. Here are the things we need to do. So I very simply and authentically was like, what do I want? Like somebody, because a friend asked me that question. She was like, listen, I am not coming with casserole. I know you're not going to eat it. What do you want? And I was like, ooh, no one's asked me that yet. Let me think about it. And I was like, I want to get out of my house and go for a walk. I want to go for a walk. And I also wanted to be really direct and specific about how people set the tone with our kids.
Yeah, so this is another one of the articles that you wrote that I found so incredible. And I'm wondering what the creative like personal process for you and your husband, like naming your cancer, your cancer's not named.
Barb.
Right.
Right.
Like you named it something else. You have like... music associated with her. Like, can you describe that?
Totally.
This is so incredible
Thank
to me.
Thank you. Yeah, so the impetus really too for this was I couldn't find any content where I saw myself and how I wanted the journey to go out there. I'm a researcher by nature. Like, I got this diagnosis. I'm like, okay, what are all the nutrition things? What are all the things? What are all the psychologists and psychiatrists say I should tell my children? And it was also morbid and dark and sad and honestly not age appropriate for my kids in a way that I felt it was as their mother. And I did not know if I was going to lose my hair. I was really fortunate. I'm a patient of Dana-Farber. They offer a system called Paxman that has like a 50-50 chance of working with your chemo, where you wear a cold cap during treatment.
Oh, my friend had a cold cap.
So I did it and it worked. I did lose my eyebrows and eyelashes, which is actually kind of a funny story, if you can believe it. We'll share.
But they look amazing now.
Oh, thank you. I bought every serum on earth. Every serum on earth. But a funny story about my girlfriend supporting me during that time, because that was hard. So I didn't know if I was going to lose my hair. And I was like, I just don't like the information that's out there about how to tell your kids. And it started with a conversation about what we didn't want. And I was like, honestly, what I don't want is the sad movie scene. And we've all seen it. It's like the knife and fork. You can hear the sound on the plate. And it's over dinner. And then bomb drop, right? Enter. Usually it's a mom. I've noticed since then, every movie, especially holiday movies, some young mom has cancer constantly. Like, we got to change the
Lifetime, the Hallmark, all listen up.
Look all at Julie. Julie, documentary. Yeah. Star of your next Christmas. Lines.
I know. Yeah. You need another mom.
Yeah.
But I didn't want that sad storyline of then, hey, I'm dropping a bomb. I'm sick. Because also, language is really important to me. In my career and how you have to articulate a vision and a path, I was like, what is the real thing here? Like, I am sick, yes. And I know and I recognize and I accept that I am sick, but I've also found this thing and I'm going to heal from it. Mm-hmm. And so it was not, and I want to be really explicit about this, like, I was not in denial. I got a lot of comments from people who are like, you're lying to your children. Like, this is not a lie. Like, I genuinely now healing.
For
like,
sure.
You yes. found the thing.
For sure.
We're getting the medicine. It's going to shrink the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal then is to take whatever that thing we named Barb, because the tumor looks like a barbell. So that's Barb. Barb made some friends under my armpit in my lymph nodes. So all her friends have to go too. So then we're having surgery.
That was your double mastectomy.
That was my double mastectomy and lymphadenectomy. Then we're having lasers to burn her house down and the house her friends built under my armpits to make sure she never comes back. And then I'm on some ongoing medicine for a period of time to really make sure she never comes back. And serendipitously enough, the clinical trial I was on, the acronym was Margo. So the superhero was Margo.
Yeah.
So Barb and Margo.
Yeah. For folks who are not watching, they may not realize how young you are. Yeah. So Margo and I both had this in common where Margo's genetic predisposition and my actual diagnosis happened at a young age, younger than typical when you think about breast cancer. How do you think your age played into your diagnosis and people taking things seriously?
Hugely. I'm so glad you asked. Hugely and still.
Yeah.
I share the story because I want people to know, like, you have to be persistent. And I also, you know, I reflect on being a young woman who is asking for something and sharing something about myself that I think is wrong. I did it. I still remember being on the phone with my primary care, whoever had answered the phone at the front desk. And I was like, hi, I don't think, you know, even like, and I'm not like a tentative person, but when it's something about me, all of a sudden I'm like, my hands go here and I'm like, hi, it's not really a lump. It's like this tiny little bump. So I downplayed the hell out of this thing that ended up being a boob eating beast.
Mm.
So being, I think, self-aware, even at a young age, that because in my mind, I don't think I even connected that this could be a disease that was coming for me. So I downplayed it. And whether that played into it or not, the person on the other end was like, you're coming in October anyway for your checkup. If it's not a lump, it's like this tiny thing. Like, okay, we'll see you then. So I shared that then with my friend group, and my friend Katie was like, absolutely not, unacceptable. Call your OB until you get seen immediately. Unacceptable. And I was like, okay. So same thing. Hi, me. It's not a, you know, downplaying it, which we do, which is so unfortunate. And every conversation thereafter, so I eventually was seen by my OB, who I truly thank, in addition to my bikini and my friend Katie, for saying, you know what, you could never know. I'm not an expert at this. You need to be seen. So he, even though it was set as low priority, was like, you should be seen and go get this done. He could not feel anything in my lymph nodes. I had 7 or more positive lymph nodes with cancer. Wow. And had zero symptoms. I was wow. genuinely healthy, active, athletic.
Just finished breastfeeding your daughter.
Just finished breastfeeding my daughter. So, you know, he wasn't worried. And also because my age, you're so young. And I'll share also, I had had a mammogram at the age of 35 because I had recurring mastitis in this breast. Whether the two are connected or not, we do not know.
What's mastitis?
It's like an infection. I call it the boob flu. So it's like when often happens when you breastfeed, when you get a clogged something and it turns into an infection.
Inside your breast, and your breast becomes like red and
red hard. And engorged. Okay. I also, side note, I had my last bout of mastitis away at a girls' trip right before COVID. And it was so bad, my husband had to come and pick me up. So I was like, of course the boob flu comes and takes me away the last girls' weekend I'll ever be able to have in a long time. So I'd had a mammogram, which was also surprising to have one so young and everything, you know, they said it was clean. And then I got to the breast care clinic and the feedback was, you're so young. I am not concerned. No one is concerned. And I think we often take the medical professional's word as gospel,
yeah.
right? Like, they're not concerned, so I should not be concerned. And the message here, too, it's like, they were not concerned because I was young, because I had all the factors that made me appear to be a healthy person, which I am. You can still be healthy and get cancer.
Yep.
So I want to talk about this
yes.
because I think there's, yes, this idea of what is healthy.
Yes.
And if you are sick or you have a diagnosis, you're unhealthy.
Right.
Is this dichotomy that I think needs to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of being wedded to being healthy because of factors that actually have nothing to do with health.
Mm.
Right? So you're young, you're active, you're of a like ideal weight.
Yep.
You're partnered.
Yep.
You're financially stable. Right? So you're like checking off all these boxes, but like no one knows.
No.
How can you can't look at someone and say, yep, that person has cancer.
Totally.
Like, what? Totally. No. And also, I mean, I think to this point, Julie, is that I never felt sick until I went through treatment. Then I felt
yes.
sick, right?
Man,
and
wild.
as the treatment compounded, I felt sicker and sicker. But day one, I walked into the cancer treatment center feeling perfectly
yes.
fine.
Yes.
So obviously your visual kind of aesthetic of wellness has nothing to do with long-term
exactly.
health outcomes.
Exactly.
Can I also go back to something that happened to me as well in the breast clinic? So while my surgeries were preventative, I had a summer of a lot of scares getting. So once I found out I was BRCA2 positive a month after I turned, no. Yeah, a month after I turned 40.
Okay.
And I had been asking for a mammogram for a long time that was denied because two of my, well, Tashira had gotten breast cancer and my other friend Judith, who was on last season, also was going through breast cancer in her 30s. And my grandma Margot died of breast cancer. And so I had been advocating and got totally shunned. They were like, breast cancer doesn't run on your father's, breast cancer doesn't pass on father's side, which is just like incorrect information.
Right. And also, not to interrupt you, it doesn't matter if it doesn't pass, right? I do not have
right. You don't
the
have
stories
the right.
of like my mother and my grandmother. Like,
right, it just doesn't.
Just me.
Just me, right.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, once I found out I was BRCA2 positive, of course, then I become like super high risk. I go for my mammogram. Just, this gets back to your point. I go for my mammogram. It's unreadable. I go for the MRI. I have 5 hot spots. I then go for an ultrasound biopsy. They can't find them on the ultrasound. Then I go back. So all of this is, you know, a week,
yeah.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Then I go back for an MRI guided biopsy, which I don't know if anyone here has had those, but you're in and out of an MRI machine and they're drilling into you while you're in and out and you're on your stomach and it's fucking traumatic. It like sounds like they're drilling into you. And I finally just start sobbing. I mean, I can't actually sob because I can't move.
You can't move, yeah.
And the doctor goes, what's wrong?
Girl.
And I was like, this is so terrifying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is so terrifying.
Absolutely.
And I, like, it's over. I'm getting, like, and I'm sitting in the waiting room because they want to put, like, metal in.
Yeah, the clips.
The clips in to see just in case. And another nurse goes by and is like, how you doing today?
Yeah.
How do you think I'm fucking doing?
And I said to her, I was like, I am not trying to be rude. You have such a hard job. No one in this waiting room, like there are like nine women in the waiting room, is okay right now. Maybe you guys change the frame of how you approach people.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. Yeah. Good for you.
Because I felt like, just like you, like there was like, you're going to be fine. Yeah. Everything's fine. Yeah. Uh-huh. You're young. You're uh-huh. small. Yeah. You're, you did all the right things. You don't smoke.
Yep.
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 It's like this machine where they're just picking and plugging and putting things in and out.
Right. Right. And it's, I'm really glad you both brought that up because I'm in and out of the doctors more than I've ever been in my life. And you get to know your medical team really well. And you see, you know, prior to my double mastectomy, part of my treatment plan. So I'll share my treatment plan too. So I was diagnosed. We realized it was HER2 positive, stage 3. So I needed 12 weeks of chemo. Mm-hmm. And the whole focus was, let's make sure you respond. Like, let's see if we can shrink the tumor and the lymph nodes. And then once you get through those 12 weeks, you're going to have the double mastectomy and the lymphadenectomy. So remove both breasts and nipples and all the lymph nodes they could find in my arm. And then they run the pathology, like all these things you don't know, right? Yeah. Again, when you watch the Lifetime movie, it's like cancer, no hair, lives or dies, the end, next Christmas. Right. Like that's the plot. But there are all these micro moments of terror that happen along the way.
Yeah.
And what I started to realize too, because you see familiar faces,
you're
like, this is somebody's job. And so even getting a double mastectomy, it's like, all right, we'll schedule you in. Like they do 12 a week. Right? Like, there are many, many.
Yes.
And I do think there, and I share this, I have great relationships with my surgeons, my doctors, and my nurses are amazing. But there is, I think, a component of sort of you move away from the shock and horror and terror that each of you bring to it. Because for them, like, it's another day in the office.
It's just very, it's a rope.
They cut boobs off all day long. Routine.
Yeah.
So it is like this really interesting juxtaposition. And we could get into a whole other conversation about how they are, you know, sort of how, not they, but like in medical fields, particularly in cancer centers, you know, what some of the goals are, because it's still a business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am somebody who's revenue driven and attached to quota and always have been. And so understanding and unpacking, like they have productivity goals. They have goals related to how many pieces of tissues and samples they get from clinical trials. Like there's this whole machine that is, to your point, like this whole wheel of productivity and revenue that drives the system forward. That of course, yes, saved all of our collective lives, but at the same time, I think misses the mark on customer experience, misses the mark on getting in there with you.
Oh,
and
sure.
I do think though that's where the nurse, like the nurses are.
Yeah.
Shout out to Lee. You're the best.
I mean, that's also why I chose to go to the Cancer Treatment Center of America, because there was a team that was interdisciplinary and they worked together every step of the way. And I mean, I had someone who was a counselor, someone who was like a patient care navigator. Mm. And I understand I was incredibly privileged in that way, because I'd also sat down with two healthcare institutions, really the best in DC, George Washington University and Georgetown. GW had nothing as far as like an integrated approach was concerned. Sure. Georgetown had a little, but no one came close to Cancer Treatment Center. And I don't know what I would have done without them, because in the midst of my treatment, I lost my nephew, which was devastating to my whole family. And we were coming on the other side of, you know, through the storm. But thank you. But I don't know what I would have done having to face, you know, more rounds of chemo in the midst of this just hopeless, deep, deep grief if someone on my team wouldn't have sat down with me and actually held my hand while I sobbed.
Yeah.
If I would have just had to go in and out of medical offices without that support.
Yeah. It makes a difference. And, you know, I shared earlier that I'm not, it takes a lot for me to cry. When you talk about moments of trauma, there was this moment, so you go through all of the treatment, and I think of it too, it's like from back on that island, it's like I swam through the first thing, right? Like I had that first mile marker of my journey.
Which was the 12 weeks.
The 12 weeks of chemo, and I got through it, and I was having my scans. I've learned all these new phrases of like scanxiety, and it's like, okay, this is a real thing. So I was having scans to see, did the chemo work, and what would happen next? Like ideally, yes, we clear you, you go have your double mastectomy and lymphadenectomy. And the goal of that surgery was come out and you have no evidence of disease anywhere. So I'm on the table with the radiologist who I had gotten to know, and I talk to everyone. I know they're not supposed to disclose anything, but I am asking questions the whole time. I was like, all right, so what do you see? What do you see? So she was like, I can't even find the tumor. And I'm there. I'm like, yes. You know, I got the needle in my boob. And I'm like, yes, they can't see the tumor. And then she's going around my lymph nodes, and she's quiet. And I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And you can feel, like, the blood is boiling. And I was like, what's going on with the lymph nodes? I'm trying to stay
positive.
And she was like, I still see abnormalities. And it's, you know, you have moments in your life where you leave your body. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God. And your mind goes to terrible places. Yeah. But I had to get off the table, and I had to go, and I had to get treatment. Like, I had to go through my day. And my nurse, her name is Lee. She is, angel is not even the best word to describe her. She is just, like, the most unbelievable human I've ever met in my entire life. She just saw my face, and she aggressively pulls the curtain and pulled me into her lap like a child.
Yeah.
Just pulled my head down, and I, like, the noises that came out of me, I can't, like, to the point where I was like, I'm really sorry. I know, like, I don't know if this is day one of chemo. This is, like, it sucked. Yeah. It's hard. And she just was like, let it out. You, like, just let it out. And she's like, you made it this far. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just don't know. You have to just keep going. And I share all that just because, you know, there are, yes, systems and all that, but some of the people involved, especially on the nursing side, yeah, who hold your hand.
Absolutely.
Like, I needed that so badly. And she just knows by looking at your face. She's not looking at my chart.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
not sitting in front of the computer. She looked at my face and said, you need that right now.
Julie, I'm wondering, in those moments, like, you've continued to run a marathon, right? I don't know if that's an analogy that sits well with anyone, but how did you manage on the day-to-day? Like, I always wondered that, or continue to kind of question that about holding space for all of these things and having to function in my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have different pressures on our life and different things we have to take care of. And how much, you know, you've been really clear about wanting to set really clear boundaries around your children.
Yeah.
But, like, how did you come home? Like, what was that like? Because I think, I mean, I'm really interested because I am so inspired by your how you've confronted this challenge.
Thank you.
But I know that for a lot of people who are listening, who inevitably are going to confront other health challenges in their life and having to manage, you know, decisions about work, decisions about family. Did you ever end up staying in Boston for a night because you didn't want to go home? I'm interested in that.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. And it's interesting. Like, so many people have been like, oh, it's inspiring. It's this. And I have, like, kind of swatted those words away because I'm like, I'm just authentically, like, I'm just doing it.
You're surviving.
Yeah. I'm just doing it. And I think of it, and I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day who had her second daughter very early and was in the NICU, and she had another daughter at home she had to take care of. And I remember going to visit her, you know, like, fight or flight. Like, I'm usually all fight in that moment. And, like, I am a ride or die friend. Yeah. I was like, I'm dying. I have to go. I'm not the friend you need me to be right now. I got hot. I was sweating. The bells, the whistles, the intensity of the NICU.
Mm.
And she was so stoic and incredible there with her child. And I was like, how did you do that? She's like, you just do it, Julie. You just have to fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that too. You know, you hear there are stories recently, the mother of one of the children who was tragically killed in Idaho, those murders that happened at the beginning of the year, her son was a triplet. And she was telling a story about how she's made the decision to move forward. She's like, because being sad and regretful about what's happened does not change the outcome. So I am making a decision. And so I think about those. I think about, you know, someone with a child or a loss of a child or, you know, not certain of the future health of your child. How do you get through it? And I think the answer is, like, you just do it. So when I think about my own journey, I don't know how much, like, objective decision making I'm making other than, like, the list of things I'm telling people to do. The day to day, I'm just doing it. You know, I go back to the castaway analogy. I'm on the island. I'm here. I've been living here for a while. You have to figure it out. And for me, what that's looked like is a lot of just living. Like, you wait. I think sometimes I used this analogy once with a friend who's very anxious to come see me. I was like, I think you think having cancer means you're going to come to my house and it's going to be really quiet and I'm going to be in beige pajamas laying not the beige. In bed.
Like, beige cashmere.
Beige cashmere. Like, I mean, that sounds actually very close to grandma. Lovely. Period. But like the grandparents in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like,
oh, my God. All day.
And like I think sometimes it's surprising that like there's music on, right. And I put makeup on, and I don't do that every day, but just living, like you gotta do the things. And but then to your point, there were some times we'd be in Boston all day, and my husband and I would look at each other and be like, you know what, like do we have the kids sleep at Nana and Pop's house tonight, and we just get home and be. Like, mm-hmm. And it's not that you go home and have, like, the profound, like, let's talk about life and explore what's going on. It's like, I just want to, like, be in my underwear and, like, watch something mindless on TV and do that. So I don't know if that's a great answer, but I think part of it is it's amazing what you're capable of doing when you are put in those situations and you just have to do it. And everyone will have a season.
But I think you're also downplaying your ability to be resilient in like Thank this you. Fortitude that you have that I'm sure has shown up in other places in your life, knowing Thank a little you. Bit about your story, I would imagine where you came from and where you are today career-wise. So there's something about that skill set that I think has translated to the way you have seen this illness and you've been like, fuck you, bitch. Like, yes. I'm about Barb can kiss my ass.
That should be my next sticker.
Right. Fuck you, bitch. Barb can kiss my ass. She can go to hell on a scholarship.
She can stay on the island.
Barb can stay on the island.
I'm leaving you here.
I'm leaving Barb.
Ho. You stay here.
I'm leaving Barb in Belize.
Period. With no running water.
Can I tell you, too, my best friend, we've been best friends since second grade. Her name's Jill. She came with me to chemo the day before Christmas. And, you know, such is life. Like, life comes at you fast. And picking you up on the way to Boston to go to chemo the day before Christmas, she has on a Santa hat and a sweatshirt that says, Barb's a ho, ho, ho.
Oh, my God!
So we walk in to get blood drawn at Dana Farber, and everyone is like, what is
going on?
And she is, like, very proudly wearing, she's like, yeah, this is my best friend. She has cancer, and we named her Cancer Barb, and Barb's a ho, ho, ho.
She's a ho. Yep. Your ability to do that, I think, is what inspires other people. And I know that you were not going into this with that mindset, but because you are not, that is what makes you an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for saying that.
And I think an incredible example of living with cancer but not being defined by your diagnosis. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but, you know, this is part of our story.
Yeah.
And it'll always be. That doesn't go away, but it also doesn't define the rest of your story.
Yeah. Such a good point, Margot. And as a matter of fact, I think this is a great segue to Season for Squeezin'. Tell us all about it and how can folks get involved?
Sure. Thank you. Can I also say, someone who grew up in corporate consulting and being a tech exec, like wearing a half shirt that has squeezing.
I love citrus, this.
Like, such a departure for me. But as is this whole year, going out of my comfort zone. Yep. So Season for Squeezing, you know, as I was thinking through how did this happen, the thing I am grateful for is I was putting on my bikini. I'm almost 40 and still wear a bikini. Yes, I do.
You better.
And
period.
I was putting on my bikini last Labor Day and I felt that barely there bump. So I say my bikini saved my life. And I think we also talked a lot about age. And one of the things that has resonated and that where I think there's so much opportunity is that the pink ribbon wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. Because this was my mother, my grandmother's, my aunt, not for me. And so is there an opportunity for us to capture the attention of women to take action, not just awareness? Because one of the other conflicting, I think, messages out there is October, and I don't want to take away from
breast cancer awareness.
In fact, I think we need a summer preheat to awareness,
ooh,
which is the action. Because in October, it's a lot of performative work women my age are doing. We are scrambling to be like, oh, shit, where are the pink socks I have to put my son in for soccer? But not doing the things ourselves. So while our boobs have their season in the sun, while they are out, make the commitment to give yourself a squeeze each time you suit up. And I'm very specific about the language, because it doesn't have to be the 7-part series of a breast exam. And it's not shrouded by the delicate language often that breast cancer is associated with. Like, I am saying squeeze your boobs.
Which is actually quite controversial, right? Mm-hmm. I just read an article about how there's like a lot of controversy about using the word boobs.
Yes. Tons. And can I say, what I find so fascinating,
which, like, again, like, is beside
this
the point,
but disease is coming at women who are in this big age at a higher rate.
Yep.
Yet we are more comfortable using action language around checking your body for bugs. There's a country song called Check You for Ticks. Like, why are we more comfortable talking about checking you for bugs than squeezing your boobs with a disease that could arguably take your life?
And this is why I use the word coochie often.
Good, yes. What a segue. And yes, use it.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you.
Our resident thoughtician would like to reintroduce our different body parts.
But here's a motion for that. Yes. So boob, back to boobs.
Boob, back to boob. So squeeze your boobs and make the commitment that if you feel anything, make an appointment to be seen before the next time you suit up. That is it. It is simple language. Squeeze your boobs, make an appointment. And then the longer term mission of our business is to get call to action tags. So I don't have anything here, but we have tags that look like this that we are, for no cost to the brands, giving to swimwear brands. So as I do, I mentioned I research a lot. I cold reached out to every single bikini designer and model in the 2023 Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition.
Incredible.
Like,
so
literally,
brave.
Like, here I am with no nipples in Barnes & Noble, like, buying the Sports Illustrated Swimwear Edition with my three kids.
I love this.
Going through each of the tags, being like, oh, I got to find that person. Heidi Fish Swimwear, who designed Padma's unbelievable seashell bikini, got back to me and said, wow, this is amazing.
Oh, I love this.
Amazing mission. How can I help? So she will be spreading our message. Courtney Jean is a brand out of Utah who ordered tags for their swimwear. Belle Curves out of Mexico ordered tags. And I'm partnering with a few other brands in the upcoming months to work on partnerships, tags. So our vision eventually, in addition to the action, give yourselves a squeeze, is getting swimwear call to action tags on every piece of swimwear sold.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And I also think it, well, there's no doubt that you will save lives. That is kind of a given.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But I also think it brings awareness to this thing, I think this full circle moment, about that this can happen to women who wear bikinis.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Right? So that's not a place or a space.
Oh, this is a good point, Margo.
That's such a good point.
Yeah. That we would normally think of as the impacted population of breast cancer.
Exactly.
But what we're saying is, no, that narrative has to go, because even in my small circle, I have three friends who were diagnosed before 40.
Yes. Yes.
I don't have that many friends, right?
Which is, I would argue differently, but between us, you are definitely the more likable and social one.
And I'm
as someone who has like 8 million people who follow her,
they don't know the real me. But I also think that's why it's so important for our podcast to hold these conversations, right?
Yes.
Because we are seeing this, we are evidence of it, and we want our audience to understand the importance
and the importance. And if we can be a space to give that support of advocating for yourself, right?
Thank you.
Not just for breast cancer, but like, if you feel off, if something is going on,
say something.
Most medical establishments are going to be like, that's just what it is to be a woman in a big age.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
You have digestive problems. You have, your tummy hurts. You have hormonal stuff. You have pain. You have this. You have that. It's just aging.
Right.
But if something's off, you know your body.
Say something. I'll share it too, maybe a closing thought, going back to one of the articles I wrote. So the one I wrote about the, like, don't bring me chicken wings. I think another really interesting, both like strange but fascinating piece of that was some of the sort of vile feedback I got from people who said, do not be so ungrateful. You're selfish for telling people you don't want food. And I find it fascinating, because isn't that where we are trying to get away from already? Like, how dare a woman says this is what I need. How dare a woman says, no, thank you. Like, aren't we trying to get away from this construct of needing to be quiet and gracious? Like, okay, doctor, you're right. You don't think it's a big deal. Okay, I will quietly.
Right.
Like, that is the whole, so to bring it full circle a bit, like, it was just fascinating to me that those were remarks I was getting in that, like, I should have just been more gracious. And it's...
And if you had been that, you wouldn't have found your cancer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it has nothing to do with being gracious. I can still say thank you.
Of course.
I can also say no thank you. Like, right. It is okay to go. And if a doctor says, I'm not worried, you can, and one of the missions eventually we want to get to, because language is so important, like giving people the what to say. Like, if someone says to you, I'm not worried, you say, how do you know that? Right? Like, I have no problem asking for data in my job. Why can I not do that for my own body? So enabling people with the language you need to not feel like you must be gracious because someone took you on to give you a checkup and maybe doesn't think it's anything. Too bad. Take up that space.
Yeah. So take up space. Your body is your own.
Yes.
It's what I hope people take from the episode today. Yeah.
And Julie's a badass.
Oh, my God.
Period.
Thank you for having me. I really am so grateful for the opportunity. Oh. Never in a million years. If you asked me 9 months ago, would you be sitting here wearing this, talking about your boobs?
If you would have asked us
wild.
A year ago if we would be here, we would have said the same thing. So we're like 3 months ahead of you.
Loss is not always loss.
No.
Right? It's not. There is always a gain on the other side. Yeah. And I think we both, all three of us, understand that.
Thank you.
So we're going to toast. What's the toast?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm about to make one up.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to toast to bad bitches, boss bitches, real bitches.
Coochie.
And cancer-fighting bitches.
Yes.
And boobs.
To the boobs. That's good. Yeah. Real good stuff. How's your water?
It is delicious. I will tell you, you know what I drink these days? What? Because I have to maintain my liver enzymes. Beet juice.
I like that too.
I do too, but life comes at you fast when you're out with your girlfriend.
Yeah, you're like,
and you're like, oh, the beet juice.
30-something drinking beet juice.
Yeah, here I am.
Yeah,
here we are. I am. No nipples, drinking beet juice. But that's just the season.
I will say, I know we're at time, but I don't want to say how you will feel, but getting your nipples is a real thing.
I have heard this.
Yeah.
I was
like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. I like went on vacation. I went, celebrated her 40th birthday, no nipples, you know. Yeah. And then I got them, and I remember getting, I have tattooed nipples.
Yes, that's what I'll be getting eventually.
And, I sent you Abby's number. Yes. I remember going from the tattoo, I don't have any other tattoos. I'm going from the tattoo parlor to my friend Toinette's house for a barbecue last summer. And she was like, how'd it go? And I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, did you have like a see-through share? You're like, what it is?
Everyone was like, wow, you know, but it does make a difference.
I have heard. So with my girlfriends are amazing. Like talking about community. So when my eyelashes fell off, one of them wrote back and I was like, oh my gosh, my eyelashes fell off. I can't believe it. And she's like, listen, your nipples also fell off, but those don't grow back. So there is a serum for your eyelashes. So we got one thing going for us.
For nipples.
Like, humor. Yeah. Thank you.
Humor gets you through.
But we say we're titty shopping all the time.
Oh, I love that.
So Golden Globes, they are like up at the TV taking pictures of boobs, being like, Julie, how about these?
Well, yeah, which ones do you like?
She looks like she's your size. So it's so funny.
Oh, because you have.
I have space. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have spacers.
Oh, I had spacers too.
Spacers.
You're still getting them.
So I'm recovering from radiation. So the spacers are in there just to like regenerate a shape of something.
Yeah.
And then I will get my implants. I'm going the implant route. There's another route you can go where you create the from your body. Which is in my life, I didn't opt for that.
Same.
So I'm getting the implants 2 days before my 20th high school reunion. And my doctor was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was like, oh, I will be there with leather pants and my Velcro bra from the hospital.
I was about to say, yeah.
I'm still going.
Show them things off, girl.
I'm still going.
Do it.
I will not have nipples by then, but
you'll have your pink bra with them.
Yes. Yeah, the Velcro.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you hop down into the description box in the show notes to find out all about Julie's amazing work, her articles, as well as her nonprofit.
Yes, and hopefully you'll join us in our paid community. Maybe we could do a live.
I would love to.
Someday, so people can kind of talk to you individually, because I have a feeling there are going to be lots of questions.
Thank you. For sure. Would love to. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Of course.